Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Chris Evans here with this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. On the way, the genius that is Stephen Fry shares some incredible facts and stories, all while waxing lyrically about his brilliant new book, Fry's Ties. Superman turned fantasy monster slayer Henry Cavill discusses series 2 of Netflix's smash hit The Witcher and martial arts, and lots of other things too, where he stays when he's making things, and big houses that he has leased for him when making mega bucks television and movie productions. Plus, the hilarious Jack Whitehall shares all about playing Uncle Casey in the film adaptation of Clifford the Big Red Dog. And super sub Sam Pinkham and Gabby Roslin chat to directing powerhouse Matthew Vaughn about his latest film, The King's Man. All of that and so much more to come. So, Dapper Dave, do tell us who is first.
He was the real deal as the Man of Steel and is simply great as Geralt. That's right, season 2 of smash hit The Witcher drops on Netflix next Friday, and here to tell us more is a man who's thwarted more monsters and baddies than you've had hot dinners. It's the one and only Henry Cavill!
Hey, Henry!
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the show!
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. I watched you on Graham's show at the weekend. You're awesome. Lovely lineup. Good fun to be had. So I'm going to go in where Graham went in as well to do with The Witcher. This has been a game. Yeah, it has been a book, and now it's this mega Netflix TV show, season 2. All right, so there's always a bit of pushback when this happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the pushback like for The Witcher? From the original fans who think they own it, of course.
Well, you know what? I'm a huge fan of the original source material.
Right.
The books is what came first, then the games.
Right.
And so you always expect pushback, because when something's a book first, everyone already has a mental image of everything that's going on.
Right.
And I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I love going online and reading all the stuff and seeing what people have to say. I think it's important.
And because you have this, because you love games, you're a gamer, aren't you?
I am indeed.
Okay. When was the last time you gamed? Did you game over the weekend?
Not this last weekend, no, but most weekends.
Okay. Do you have a go-to game?
Total War is my go-to game.
Okay.
Warhammer 2.
And do you have a sort of nostalgic favourite that you go back in time? Is it like wine? Can you go back and discover some belters?
The graphics have come so far now that it's quite difficult to do. Right. But I have some good memories of good stuff.
Okay, so going into The Witcher, as you know, as one of the superstars of it, if not the superstar of it, you take in all that sort of backstory that you don't have to research as an actor this time around. Or do you? Am I being presumptuous?
I mean, you don't have to do anything. I like to research.
Don't tell them that.
I like to do the research.
Okay.
And it's really, really important for me. And so, yeah, I try and I bring as much of the book Geralt to the show as the showrunner's vision will allow.
And again, you know, it's not about preaching to the choir here. It's about informing the yet to be converted. So we're season 2. In mm-hmm. I watched episode 1 of season 2 in. I know that obviously therefore there's been a season 1, you know. I went to school, I know that 2 comes after 1, but I didn't feel like I was up to speed almost straight away. What might I need to know from season 1 to get into season 2? I didn't feel like I needed to know anything.
Oh goodness me, that's quite a question.
Is it? Sorry.
Yes. Okay, so Geralt, the character I play, is a monster hunter.
Yeah.
And these are mutated humans, essentially.
Got all that.
Who are faster, stronger, can take special potions, and they're great at hunting monsters. and there's also a sorceress called Yennefer and a young lady called Cirilla.
Right.
And we will discover a lot more about Cirilla and her powerful nature in season 2.
To be a monster hunter.
To be a monster
hunter. So how many monsters have I missed that you've hunted down in season 1? Many monsters.
A few. Not quite 8, but close to that.
And
it's been a while since I've watched it.
Do they all come up with their own challenges, these different monsters?
They do indeed. And some of them aren't even worth or shouldn't even be killed, because they are the nice kind of monster rather than the bad kind.
Oh my goodness me. So the monster hunter can get it wrong?
Yes, he gets it wrong a lot. That's kind of his MO.
Right.
He does his best to do the right thing and often ends up in trouble, kills a bunch of humans, and no one likes him for it. though he was doing a good thing.
No one likes him. No one likes him. No one likes him. He doesn't care. No one likes him. No one likes him. Geralt, the Monster Hunter, and he don't care. So is it fun? Is it fun to make? Is it like, because is this escapist? You know, it is a fantasy. You know, how is that? How is it to make that kind of genre?
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Fantasy has been my genre since I was knee-high to a grasshopper.
Right.
Yeah, I love it. It's also hard work because it's got to be done right. And so it takes a lot of thought and research.
And physicality.
And physicality, yes.
Yeah, your sword work is amazing. Because my little boy Eli, he's 9, right? And he has a collection of sticks. Every time we go out walking in the woods, he'll bring back a new stick. I bought his mum a steamer once because she wanted one. And in a steamer, you get like, you know, that you get, it's like a fancy coat hanger. You get it on a pole.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got this sort of folding down shoulders.
Yeah.
That's his new thing. And I said, look, what's your bit of The Witcher? And the stick work, or the staff work, or the sword work, you know, that's very impressive.
So he's wielding a steamer around the house. That sounds really dangerous.
I only let him do it in the yard.
Okay.
It's got a really sharp edge where it's supposed to fit into the steamer for which it was bought, Eli, for heaven's sake. It's a very expensive stick. What are you? But seriously, your choreography, and it's all very impressive. How good is that, you know, in the flesh on the soundstage without any special effects?
Very rarely is every take perfect.
Right.
But I love it. I live and breathe that kind
of stuff. But you're a martial artist anyway, aren't you?
I wouldn't say a martial artist. No, right. I've done a variety of things over the years
for
training.
Take us through that. Take us through that journey.
There was a movie I did called Immortals many, many moons ago.
Right.
And Roger Yuan was my trainer for that. And he taught me the basics of Wing Chun, Kung Fu, and something else, Kali. And it was. I'm talking basic.
No,
basics.
But hang on a minute. You take basic of Kung Fu. We'll take the basics of Kung Fu, won't we?
I mean, I don't know if I'd actually be able to apply them in a street fight, but.
What about the transfer of energy? Because it's about the oncoming. Isn't that what you do with the martial art?
Depends on the martial art. Normally transferring your energy from your fist into someone's face is the key bit.
Okay, so the good old-fashioned stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too.
Thank you very much. Witcher is on Netflix from the 17th of December.
Yes.
All episodes available from season one now as I speak. I know this because I looked them up last night. Thanks, Henry.
Thank you very much.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If our next guest is calling the shots on a movie, you know you're in for a good time. His new film, The King's Man, is out on Boxing Day. So if you want some mind-boggling action, explosions galore, and exquisite tailoring to help digest your turkey, look no further. It's the one and only Matthew Vaughn!
Matthew Vaughn! Morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
He's caused havoc in the studio. Matthew, you can't take you anywhere. You just said it reminds you of your days with Chris in the 90s. You've spilt everything.
If it was Chris.
Yeah.
Can I just ask Dapper Dave a quick question? Dave, did you give that voiceover intro even more oomph than usual because there's a world-famous movie director in here?
Absolutely.
100%. I was going to say your voice did change.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's just because you're here.
Were you impressed, Matthew? Would you find a job for David?
Yes.
Good. Excellent, I guess.
As he's clearing up coffee.
Yeah.
Creating your own stunts in the studio at the same time, which is great.
I can multitask, don't worry.
It's Matthew, I don't know what happened at the end of your movie, The Kingsman yesterday, because I started watching it, and then with Disney, they give you a login, which only lasts for a certain amount of time, 3.5 hours, I think it lasts, because I had to keep stopping it to sort the kids out.
Right.
I missed...
Okay.
It's good,
this is literally a cliffhanger. The bit where I got booted off...
Don't say, because you'll give something away.
You'll give a lot away, but... I haven't seen the movie totally finished, so I'm not the man to ask.
Do you want to ask me? Because I've seen the film.
If it doesn't spoil everything.
No, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm not going to tell
Loved it.
But you might hate the ending.
Well, I might do. Yeah. I might do. And if I do, I'll let you know.
Do you know what? It was so magnificent to look at, Matthew. It's the cinematography. It's beautiful. It's epic. It's an epic movie.
It is an epic. We tried it. Well, we shot it 3 years ago. So, and I'm making a movie at the moment, so it's sort of surreal that I've got images of that film. I can't remember what we left in, what we left out. So it's I'm going to watch it tonight with an audience for the first time.
So you filmed it just before the first lockdown, did you?
A year and a bit before the first lockdown,
wow.
3 years ago.
Oh, hold on, you just said you're going to watch it for the first time with an audience. So you actually haven't... You're the director. Did you know you're directed?
I know I did, but there was a thing called The World sort of suddenly stopped, shall we say.
So you didn't do any of the editing?
We were finishing the movie off, and then lockdown happened. So normally, at the stage we got to, we then test it with the audiences.
Wow. Yeah.
But we couldn't. And so it's a bit weird.
So you weren't involved with the edit of it?
No, I edited the whole thing.
You edited, right, okay. Yeah, but you just haven't seen it from such
But we finished it nearly 2 years ago. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I've made three films since, so it's a lot of things.
You've made three more films in that
produced
time?
Produced two films, and literally, if I go on my phone, I'll be... Well, they're filming as we speak on my other one. They've continued without me today, which they're probably very happy about. So they're...
Are you, yeah. I hope you're nice on set, though, are you?
Very nice.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. So no, I'm pretty nice. It's different, though. Now we're wearing masks. It's actually not as fun, but we get more... It's more efficient, but it's not as fun as it used to be.
You get stuff done because you know you have to get it done.
You can't hang out and talk about things anymore.
Well, no, seriously, congratulations on this. Did you... When you did the first two, because I know there's also three coming out.
Of 3/4.
Yeah.
Where you want to describe
this
it.
One is the prequel and the how prequel. It all happened. So yeah. Did you decide on this one before you came up with the other two, or the other two after
Well,
this?
No. Do you know a movie called The Man Who Would Be King?
Yes.
So it was one of my favourite films as a kid, and I watched it and I thought, why don't we do The Man Who Would Be Kingsman? And if you know the first film, there is a 40-second speech by Colin Firth explaining to Eggsy how and why Kingsman was founded, and I just thought that would make a great film. And I, as a director, I needed to do something different, and I wanted to make an epic... I don't think epic films exist anymore.
I agree.
It's all CG, and they're great. I love superhero films, but they're like a video game. So I thought, let's go back and do something a little bit more old-fashioned in a modern manner.
That's actually... Do you know, I was going to say to you it's very old-fashioned, but I didn't know if you would take that as a compliment, and I do mean it as a compliment.
Oh, definitely. There's nothing wrong with being old-fashioned.
Good.
We're getting, you know, it's I think everything's old-fashioned. It just gets renewed. I mean, we can go through every song up there and say what song they ripped off, you know, it's, and then we're inspired by.
Yes, that's probably a better way of putting it. Yeah.
So for people who don't know, who haven't seen the Kingsman movies, can you tell us the story, the basic story of them?
All of them? Or
yeah, all of them would be terrific.
No, the basic story of Kingsman, they're sort of an independent intelligence agency, which was sort of as British can be, there to help the world when the world needs help.
But it's... It seems like that the earlier ones, the first one and two, were more tongue in cheek. This third, which is the prequel, it feels not so tongue in cheek. It feels more serious.
It has to be. It's set around World War One, which you've got to be respectful of. Firstly, yeah. And secondly, it's a journey. You can't start if a prequel means it has to be different. If it's the same, then there's nowhere for it to go. So if you're having you can't give birth to an 18-year-old boy. It has to be a baby and grow up. So that's sort of what this is. This is the nascent Kingsman.
And it was mainly filmed in the UK?
Yes, mainly, and Turin, which Turin. I can tell you is an amazing place.
Beautiful.
Never been before, and it blew my mind. So all of Russia, all those beautiful, beautiful sets weren't sets. They were real in Turin.
Matthew, what an absolute pleasure to have you in on the show. I'm thrilled to say that The Kingsman is an original, and the way that the movies should be done, the way you say should be done, it is fabulous.
Use that word again. I know we've said it a few times, but it's epic.
It is epic.
Yeah.
It is epic.
One question for you.
Yeah.
Is your sister still doing F1?
She is, yeah.
We're doing a Kingsman car with Williams next week.
Are you really?
Yeah. So ask her to... How's plug it away.
In what way?
It's going to have the Kingsman written all over it, and we're going to do a deal with... I love Williams and what they stand for, and we're going to do a Kingsman-Williams mashup.
What, for the Grand Prix next weekend?
The Grand Prix next weekend.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, she'll love that. Matthew, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Matthew.
I'm sorry I didn't get to see your mate Chris, but he'll be back in tomorrow.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Give him my best. And he's got Henry Cavill, so I was filming with him 4 days ago. So on the other film.
Oh, well, do give Henry my best as well.
He's lovely. Good man. He's a good man.
Good man. Thanks so much for coming, mate.
Great. That's it.
Thank you.
Cheers, buddy.
Apologies for the tea.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Whether we're talking Half Windsors, a Trinity, a Kelvin or a Pratt Shelby, our next guest is the man in the know. His new book, Celebrating the Humble Tie, Fries Ties, is out now. So please welcome a man well-versed in, pretty much everything, to be honest. It's the superb Stephen Fry.
Hello, Stephen.
Oh, what a welcome. Thank you so much, Chris.
Lovely to see you. What was he gassing onto you about whilst that last record was playing. This bloke over here.
We're talking about the book. He was kind enough to say pleasant things about it because it does, on the face of it, seem an extraordinary, indeed a preposterous idea to write a book about ties. But on one page, and this is, I suppose, typical of the book, there's a tie which is playing cards. It's a rather beautiful silk playing card tie. And in it, I mentioned that on QI, I performed this unique trick that had never been performed before. I shuffled the cards and produced an order in the pack that had never been seen in the history of playing cards. And that seems like a weird boast, and how can you prove it? But the numbers are so bizarre with cards that the order of a pack of 52 cards is expressed by mathematicians as 52 with an exclamation mark next to it, sometimes called 52 shriek. And it means 52 times 51 times 50 times 49 times 48, etc. Or the other way around, 1 times 2 times 3 times 4, all the way up to 52. And that number is so huge that there is simply no possibility. You'd be more likely to drop a tray of ball bearings and for the ball bearings to spell your name out than for anyone to shuffle the pack into a position that it's been seen in before, unless they're manipulating it as a magician, of course. Anyway, that was just one of those things that is the price you pay for doing QI.
See, I mean, that's, you know, when he comes in with a, when he kicks off with a story like that, we know it's going to be fine. We could go home now. So yeah. Ask him one more question. We could nip off, do a bit of Christmas shopping, back at 10:15. He'd still be on.
He moved on to chess.
I know.
The chess thing.
Well, chess is similar. I was quite keen on chess as a teenager, and I remember reading this book by George Steiner called The White Knights of Reykjavik, and in the first paragraph he says chess is a complex game. In fact, there are more possible games of chess than there are atoms in the known universe.
No, that can't be true.
I know, exactly.
That can't be true, can it? Can it?
It seems extraordinary. But if you check it out, it's because the numbers are so vast with permutations of things. And actually, chess gave rise to that famous story, which I always loved, of the emperor, you know, who was rather bored and didn't like the games that were available. He was a shah, like the Shah of Iran, and he asked his viziers and wise people if they could invent one that was fair and reasonable and took intelligence. And someone came up with chess and showed him the moves, and apart from the fact that white has a minimal advantage because it always plays first, it is a very fair game. Everything's open, nothing up your sleeve, etc. Anyway, the emperor was so pleased, he offered whatever reward the man wanted. And he said, it's very simple. All you have to do is, you see there is the 8x8 checkerboard on which we play the game. If you put a grain of rice on one square, and then two on the next, and four on the next, and so on. That's all. And the emperor thought, well, I got away with that. That was easy.
Bargain.
Called for a sack of rice and put one on and two on, and then they slowly realised that this was not going to be as easy. And in order to fill the 64th and last square would take more rice than has ever been grown in the history of the planet.
No!
It all happens that quickly. Zillions of numbers, yes. It's called an exponential curve, and it is frightening how fast. And, of course, we know about exponential because of
virus.
Because of the virus.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The rate at which doubles. And there are more famous and benign ones. There's a thing called Moore's Law. Have you come across that?
I think I've heard of it.
It's a man called Gordon Moore who founded the integrated electronics company Intel, and the very first integrated chips, silicon chip semiconductors, fitted a number of transistors. And in the early 60s, he predicted that every 18 months or so, they'd be able to double the number of transistors in the same space, which doesn't sound like much of a boast. But again, by doubling, you come up with the computing we have now. You'll remember the early days in the 80s of microcomputers and things like that.
ZX Spectrum 82. Yeah.
And in 1999, I think they built a thing called, it began with an A, like an Altair computer. Not the Altair, that was one of the very early ones, but it began with an A, and it was the most powerful computer in the world. Mm-hmm. 3-4 years later, the PlayStation that was in most kids' bedrooms had the equal power. That's how, because it doubles. And when it doubles from a high number, it's amazing what happens.
And that's why it's playing havoc with our mental health, because we can't evolve as fast as we need to keep up with the one thing we were always master over its servant.
Yes, the amount of memory and real-time activity you can have online now is so astonishing. Yeah. As you say, our brains seem... I wonder if they are, though, you know, because I think sometimes people underestimate that extraordinary thing we have between our ears. And an example I give, which still amazes me, is that if you stand in the countryside and you look around and it's pretty empty and there's a little bit of wind and somewhere in the distance there's a copse or a spinney of, you know, trees, and the wind turns a leaf so that the silver back shines, you catch it from ages away, and you look and you see it so quickly because we've evolved to respond to things like that, because it could be lunch or it could be something that thinks we're lunch. So you've got to be aware of these movements. Well, that's fine. We understand that. But 2 hours later, you can stand in the middle of Oxford Street with thousands of people around you in bright colours, on the phone, cars coming towards you, hopping across the street, avoiding the taxis and the buses, talking on the phone, and your brain is processing all this astounding amount of subsidiary noise. The same brain that saw one tiny thing and immediately focused on it is capable of blanking out. Because so often what the brain does that's brilliant is not the processing, it's when it inhibits itself, when it closes down other things so you can concentrate on one. And then it allows you to shut off these amazing signals that are coming at you in so many colours and noises and speeds, and yet we cope without even thinking.
All right, Stephen, you're a dream guest. You're a dream human being. We love you, and happy Christmas.
Thank you, and happy Christmas to
this
you
is a great
and your
book.
Listeners.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Stephen Fry Fry's Ties, The Life and Times of a Thai Collection. All right, here we go. Well, there we go. We're done.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
You'll know him from the stand-up stage, from the big screen, and from almost everything on your brand new Sky Glass telly. You even know his dad, but you might not know how good his American accent is.
Oh, it's amazing.
Until you see the film adaptation of Clifford the Big Red Dog out tomorrow. So please welcome the always brilliant Jack Whitehall.
All right, Jack.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you, Chris?
Very well, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Long time no speak.
I know. It's Naughty Santa here.
Naughty Santa. How is Naughty Santa?
He's all right. How's my naughty elf?
This is weird role play that I'm not ready for at this time of the morning. Yes, your naughty elf is good.
Good. Let's get straight into the Yorkshire Pud debate. To Yorkshire Pud or not Yorkshire Pud on your Christmas plate. Jack, I have witnessed you cooking up a Christmas storm for many people. 20-odd people that night, and you absolutely smashed it. So yes or no to Yorkshire Puds on the Christmas plate?
I'm afraid I'm a purist, and I would say they belong nowhere near a Christmas plate. They should be kept to roast beef and roast beef only, and you can't start messing around with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and by the way, Jack cooks for many, many people. There's the Feeding the 5,000 and then Jack Whitehall's Christmas dinner. They're not that far apart, let me tell you.
I put my turkeys in the bath. I bathe them overnight. I give them a brining.
Yeah.
Although I forgot to clean out the bath before I put them in 1 year, and they then smelt of like lavender. Yeah, and Radox or whatever had been in there before.
Yeah, well, see, if you didn't scent your bath and you went for a run first of all, you would be brining them with actual human salt, which I think...
I might try that this year.
Try it, baby.
Just bath with them, yeah.
How many people come around to yours this year? Is it at the same place? Will it be as absolutely groovy and gorgeous?
No, obviously with current restrictions, it's going to be hard. So we're going to do it at Downing Street this year and probably have 40 or 50 people around.
Perfect.
I've texted Bojo. He's got a spare room that I can use.
Because that's allowed. That's allowed. The film. All right, we're going to move on to the film. Clifford the Big Red Dog. Now, before we get into the film, which is amazing, and you're unbelievably convincing American accent. How'd you get there, Jack Whitehall? We're just worried about the tone of Red of the Dog. I am particularly. Clifford the Big Red Dog doesn't sit in my eyes, you know, and they could be wrong. They've been wrong before. But we are broadcasting from the field beyond wrong and right. So this doesn't have to go. We don't have to fall out about this. You know, I think he's a bit more pink than red.
So as the nation's most famous ginger, you're like the gatekeeper for redheads. And for you, you're having none of it. It's not the right tone.
Well, you've taken this discussion to a more confrontational level now. That's sort of an attack observation. Because, as you know, not only am I not as ginger as I once was, I don't really have any hair, Jack.
That's what I wanted from Clifford, though. I wanted him to evoke, like, classic Chris Evans. I said, I want Don't Forget Your Toothbrush era Chris Evans. That should be the hue of the dog. And I sent them loads of images of you, and that was what we were aiming for. And they failed, because if you think that it's not red enough, then they've done you a disservice and they've done me a disservice.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Jack, I don't think it's red at all. I just think it's full-on pink.
There are a lot of people that take issue with the rendering of this dog. The redness has been an issue that people have shared with me. The most peculiar issue that someone has taken with Clifford the Big Red Dog is a grown adult that sent me a screenshot of Clifford that he'd taken in the cinema with Clifford from behind with his tail up. And he asked me why Clifford hadn't been given an anus and was very upset that the dog hadn't been rendered anatomically correct.
Well, I think he probably has, but because of his pink hue, one melds into the other. That's another issue there, right there.
Someone else had countered the observation by saying maybe, you know, he doesn't have an anus, which means obviously because he hasn't got that, he can't do any doggy business, which is also potentially the reason why he's so big.
Oh, and red, I would imagine. Bursting at the seams, the poor chap. Right, now, so we have an adaptation on our hands here. I'm sorry, I'm so late to the party that this is a literary beginning for Clifford the Big Red Dog. How did you get involved? How long has it been in the making? How did you make it? How was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, we shot this movie like 3 years ago. It is a very popular kids book in America, written by this guy called Norman Bridwell. It's kind of like their Paddington, right. And that's the sort of tone of the movie as well. It sort of feels like a Paddington. It's got that kind of like warm, fuzzy feeling when you're leaving the cinema. It's funny. It's got a lot of heart. Yeah, it's a really sweet kids film. And if you're a parent, like I went to see it with loads of my friends and family and their kids, an hour and a half, peace and quiet. These kids were like totally captivated by this big red dog. So I think that is probably a bit of a gift during this holiday season.
What do you want to do next, Jack Whitehall?
Just hang out with you again. No. We haven't had a Christmas drink for so long. Oh, what, professionally?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you've dabbled in movies before, big ones, and this is another massive movie. Would you like this to be it? I mean, I know you love your stand-up and you love everything else you do, but would you like to do, like, you know, 10 years of Steve Martin or, you know, the other greats, you know, Robin Williams? Would you like to step up to that plate? And I know you won't compare yourself with those, but I can. You don't have to.
I mean, I'd love to be able to do more movies and to make more stuff like this and put it out into the world. But, you know, I think what's always good about my career is that I always manage to find a way of bringing myself back down to earth. So, for example, for the next week, I'm going on tour with my mum and dad to do a book tour about a book we wrote in the summer about family holidays. And it will feel very much like I've been brought right back down to earth. I felt like I had possibly arrived somewhat this summer when I was in Hollywood on a red carpet with Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. And within 3 months, I will be at the Peterborough Theatre on stage interviewing my mother about what items she likes to pack into her beach bag when she goes away on holiday.
That is awesome. Jack, thanks for being here.
Back down.
Happy Christmas. Clifford the Big Red Dog is in cinemas from tomorrow. And by the way, How to Survive Christmas, tickets via jackwhitehall.com. When and where might you be doing that?
Around the country next week and the Hammersmith Apollo in London.
All right, mate. Lots of love.
So lovely to speak to you.
You're awesome, Jack. Thanks so much.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, so we've heard from a bunch of sensational guests already, but still to come, the sharpest mind in F1, David Crofty Croft, gets us raring to go for the dramatic final race of the calendar in Abu Dhabi. Singing sensation Jamie Cullum discusses his new album, The Piano Man at Christmas, with his new friends, his new amazing friends, the Kansas Smitties. The always cheery Lenny Henry flicks through his brand new kids book, The Boy with Wings. QI quizzing mastermind John Lloyd talks about his book too, Funny You Should Ask, again. And funny man Ben Elton tells us all about his 10-day pop-up residency at the Harold Pinter Theatre in London's West End. So let's get right back to it. Vassos, who's next?
Our next guest is so multi-talented, it's almost annoying. He's comedy royalty, acting royalty. He co-founded Comic Relief and even proved how well he could sing on The Masked Singer. Now he's storming into the world of children's fiction with his debut novel, The Boy with Wings. So please welcome the man with wings, who is Sir Lenny Henry.
Good morning, Sir Lenny. Hey!
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. How's it going?
It's great. You look like you're freezing your nuts off there. Is it cold in that studio?
How can you see me?
Because we're on a live Zoom with pictures, Chris.
I didn't know that. I didn't know.
It's the new way of working on the radio.
No,
apparently.
I knew you were coming our way, but I didn't realise we were coming your way. No, I'll tell you why I've got this snood on, this gorgeous snood, is because Rachel, who usually does the news Tuesday through Friday, has these gift boxes, and this snood was in there, and I just loved it, and I put it on, and I just don't ever want to take it off.
It's a nice snood, and I'm loving the word snood. I think we should try and include it into as many conversations as possible, snood.
Mate, we've had some great words this week. So Stephen Fry was on the show, and he was talking about ties, because his new book, Fry's Ties, is out, and he's talking about shirt makers, and then he said, you know, they are shirtiers. And I said, is that what they're called? And he said, no, I've just made it up, but they should be called shirtiers, don't you think?
Yeah, shirtier is a good word. Shirtiers.
Great word. And last night I was introduced to the phrase Wordle. So basically we did this survey at the church last night about what people wanted from our mindfulness night. More people wanted calm than other things. People wanted peace as well and joy, you know, and a bit of quietude. And so what we did is we fed all these different words into this thing called Wordle. And then what it gives you a mind map representation of the most popular things people want. And that's your Wordle of your words.
That's fantastic. I've got to do that. I've got to have that.
You have got to have it.
I think at the centre of mine would be the word pie, P-I-E. Because that's what I think about most of the time.
But we did suggest to Stephen, because his new book, Fry's Ties, is so good. We said, how about Fry's Pies? It's got to happen next.
Oh, it's got to happen.
Yeah.
It'll be a result.
Listen, congratulations on this book, Lenny. I'm saying it's a movie waiting to happen. You know, it reads almost like a screenplay. Tell everybody about Tunde.
Tunde is a 12-year-old black kid who goes to the local schools, being bullied by these geezers, who are both black and white, because he's darker than them and he's also got a funny nose. So they're picking on him. And it does chime with stuff that happened to me when I was a kid, but this kid is different. Tunde has an affinity with birds. When he's upset and anxious, birds in the vicinity get upset and anxious too. And there's a climactic moment during a football match where Tunde, who's been allowed to play in the football team, goes up for a match-winning header, and he stays up there because he's sprouting these extraordinary, gorgeous, beautiful, shiny wings. And then the rest of the book is about, he's an adopted kid, so who are his birth parents? Where are they from? What do these wings mean? Does he have other abilities? Will he use them for good or evil? Or will he just use them to smack down the bullies? And I think it's a thrill ride. And a kid did ask me when I was reading in their classroom if it was going to be a movie, because if it was, he'd wait till the movie came out. And I said, no, you've got to read the book, kid. Read the book first so that I can pay for some shoes.
That's such a kiddie
question.
Maybe a pair of
trousers.
But don't you love the honesty?
Yeah, I do love it. You know, it's easier. Of course it's easier to watch a movie. But how much, I don't know about you, but the joy of sitting with a book and just getting lost in the story is everything to me. It's been like that since I was about 8. My auntie Pearl joined me to Dudley Library. Libraries give us power, they rule. And she also introduced me to Marvel Comics and DC Comics when I was about 9. I was going on a very long car journey from Dudley to Birmingham, which it may not sound like a long way, but when you're 9, it's interminable.
It's forever.
And both my parents smoked copiously.
Nice.
So there were these two kids just in like this London fog in the back of the car. But luckily, my auntie Pearl had given me these comics to read. And by the end of the journey, I was hooked. Yes. So I wanted to write a superhero origin story, and Tunde will be back. There will be more Boy with Wings stories, because he's going to have many, many more adventures.
Before you go, Len, how is knighthood an ennoblement and you?
It's really lovely. The knighthood is good because old people now, and I'm 63, so they've got to be really old. People took their forelocks, even if they're bald, they reach for a forelock and they reverse out of the room, and it's, I just go, what are you doing? I don't know. I don't understand it. It's really weird. There's no change. But my family, when I got the knighthood, had a party for me, and there was a banner that said, "Congratulations, Uncle Selin." So they all go, "Uncle Selin,
love it.
Do you want some more trifle, Uncle Selin? There's curry goat and rice in the back." It was brilliant.
That is brilliant.
But they just treat me like normal. And young people don't give a monkeys. It's very good. The better kind of groovier thing is I got the key to Dudley. which means I can drive sheep over a bridge, Chris. I don't have any sheep, but if I did,
yeah,
that's what I do.
But there's a zoo, isn't there, in Dudley on the hill?
I could go and borrow a giraffe. I could drive some giraffe down Dudley High Street. That would be very exciting.
I love it, I love it. Right, before you go, what are you doing for Christmas? Come on, who's in charge of the turkey, if there's turkey involved whatsoever?
I'm going to jerk the turkey, I think. We're going to have a jerk turkey.
Wow.
It's partly Delia, partly my mum. I've got to cut the Christmas tree to make it fit into a corner. And the last time I did that, it looked like David Bowie on the front of Pop-Ups. I'm not a very good tree trimmer. But I'm going to put the sprouts in now, as per tradition. And I'm going to just keep my fingers crossed. Delia, my mum, trim the Christmas tree, try and get the lights to work. I'm doing all that good work. And we bought most of the presents and done the card. So that's what we're doing. And we've got family coming round. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Beautiful. So the original boy with wings is now the celebrity chef jerking the turkey.
That's right. That's what's happening.
If you forgive the expression.
Jerking the turkey. It's a new thing.
Lenny, great to talk to you, man.
Nice to talk to you too. The boy with wings is coming to a stocking near you soon.
Okay, all right, got it. Lenny Henry, illustrated by Keenan Ferrell. It is out now and it is the movie waiting to be made. That was Sir Lenny of the Henry Hood.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
I think a round of applause from here, don't you, from everybody. That's awesome. Okay, as you can probably tell, I'm now down the corridor with Jamie and the gang. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Chris.
Now, listen, we've got some great guests on the show next week, but I sort of wish this was our last show before Christmas because it doesn't get any more festive.
I think you're probably right. Oh. I love playing with these guys as well. This is an amazing band. They're called Kansas Smitties.
I know.
They are incredible.
We're going to get into that in a moment or two. But we're 2 weeks to go, man. And
it
feels like it's now.
I like it. It just feels like it's getting closer and closer this year. Even by October, it felt like we were coming into Christmas.
I know. Tell us, how early did you tree this year?
Only yesterday.
Did you?
Only yesterday.
Yeah, it's interesting that. Because we meant to tree early, but we just sort of didn't get around to it. We sort of thought we had.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But do you take yours down straight after Christmas or do you leave it up for a bit?
We leave it up for as long as the pine needles will allow.
Exactly. As long as the cats haven't pulled ours down.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because you get your tree, you know, and if you're lucky with the old needleage, you think you are, but then, you know, if it, like the dog's tail brushes or something, it's like a cartoon. They just all fall off, don't they? Because they're clinging on for grim death.
Definitely.
By the end of it.
Yeah.
Do you go for the fir tree or do you go for the spruce?
I think the spruce.
The spruce is the non-drop.
It's not my area, really.
It's fewer branches, but quite so more candelabra-y.
Yes, that's right. That's the one.
That's the one.
That's the one we've got. Oh, beautiful description.
Okay. I used to sell them.
Did you?
I used to have a Christmas tree farm.
What?
I know. Don't ask.
I mean, the many careers of Chris Evans. Wow.
It's true. The funny thing is, I didn't know I had a Christmas tree farm for 5 years. I said, imagine owning all those Christmas trees. And the bloke who was in charge of my farm, because I did have a farm, he said, well, you are the bloke. I went, really? Let's sell them. He said, well, we wondered when you were going to come round to this idea.
It's a bit like when I did my first gig and I couldn't believe I got paid to do it. Like, what do you mean I get paid?
Incredible. When was that? Where was that?
Well, I used to play, I guess, cocktail piano at a hotel.
Yes.
Near where I lived. And it's quite weird because when I was 16, I looked like 9 years old.
Right.
So it must have been quite a thing to kind of walk in with this kind of child in a suit playing these old songs. But, you know,
you should have charged double.
It was a paid gig. Now I got 25 quid for 25. Like 4 hours of playing.
It's the best thing.
It was amazing.
Cash.
Yeah, cash.
The best thing in the world. All right, so we've given your band a shout out. They are awesome. And you're up to more than full strength. Giacomo Smith.
It's Giacomo. I'm just going to, sorry, don't worry. I've got to get it right because he's a legend.
Sorry.
He deserves the right name.
Sorry. I apologise. Giacomo Smith. You got Dan Hyatt.
Yay!
You got Alex Harper, you got Joe Webb, you got Dave Arch, you got Ferg Island, and you got Will Cleesby, you got your good self, Jamie Cullum. Now, it says here the arrangement, or the array rather, of instruments that these guys are playing between them, not necessarily in the right order, are drums, double bass, guitar, keys, tenor sax, trombone, alto sax and clarinet, and you on vocals and piano. Except you're not on vocals and piano.
I'm not on vocals and piano.
That is a massive porky pie.
Yeah.
Who is on piano?
Joe Webb is on the piano. And this is a Christmas present to myself to play with these guys, because these are incredible musicians.
Okay.
And this is so fun for me to do this.
These are the Kansas Smitties.
Exactly. Right. And they have great records out under their own name as well.
Okay, so people who aren't watching on Facebook Live, live streaming, may have thought that was you, you know, going off on one, extemporizing rather brilliantly on Honky Tonk Piano. Well, it wasn't him. It was our friend Joe, who it was.
Yes, it was.
Now, when he goes off on one like that, because you go off on things like that all the time, because it's what you do. What do you call that? What is that called that he just did?
Well, he did an improvised solo.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you, and because of you honky tonking, right?
Yeah.
And does it matter if you mess up? Because as long as you're just around the right keys, it sounds like you meant to slide from the black notes, the black keys to the white keys. Does that all work? Could you play with mittens on? And that was funny. That Joe, could we get you a pair of mittens? This is how good Joe is.
Honestly, Joe could play with mittens.
No, I bet he could, because it's all more or less there, isn't it?
You could do that Errol Garner thing, couldn't you? No worries.
Okay. We'll start with... Oh, stop showing off. You can be too good at something, you know. Well, we start with mittens, then we'll go on to boxing gloves.
Mm.
Yeah, and then maybe just a straitjacket.
I mean, I've used my foot quite a lot.
I know. Yeah, you've seen your foot. All right, so tell us about Kansas Smitties. There's a bar in Shoreditch. These guys play in this bar in Shoreditch. Is that where you all met up, or what happened?
Well, I mean, I should go over to Giacomo for that, but they did have an amazing bar.
Now that we can pronounce his name, please feel free to speak to the guy.
Exactly. Shall I pass over to Giacomo?
If you want to
explain a little bit of the history of the Kansas Smitties, because it's good.
Okay.
What was the question?
Just tell us about Kansas Smitties, the bar in Shoreditch, how you guys got together, how you met Jamie.
So we started... We started our band about 8 years ago, and we had a bar for 5 years before COVID. The bar's closed now, but we're going to open a new one next year, so stay tuned for that.
Good for you.
We met Jamie through his radio show, I believe, and he played, you know, graciously played a lot of our music and has been a champion for the whole London jazz scene and all new music that's been produced under the, you know, the name of jazz and other stuff too. And he got in touch with us at the beginning of the year and said, you know, you want to be on my new Christmas album?
Yeah.
And we were kind of quietly freaking out, like, yes! But we were like, oh, yeah, we might be free for that.
Right, you got to play cool.
Yeah, you have to be cool.
Helps for the negotiation
jazz,
as well. You can't be too keen.
No, you can't be too keen. You
can't be too keen.
So we said, yeah, all right. You know, yeah, sure, if you want.
See, because there's a come and get me price, or there's just come and get me. And then there's, you can try to come to get me. And that's what I'm feeling with the Smitties.
Yeah.
Great. How's it going?
It's killer. So, for this record, right, we were supposed to do three songs.
Mm-hmm.
Three songs became five, and then we went in the studio. How many did we do?
11.
We did 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So we had a great time.
Okay, so this is a reimagined. This is with added magic dust, added festive magic stardust of Kansas Smitties, because the Piano Man Christmas album was out last year, and it is still the number one album next to... one of my three record players.
Oh,
it is awesome, Jamie.
Thanks, Chris.
So what do we get? What do we get this year around, apart from the Kansas Smitties?
So last year, obviously, I did all the original songs.
Right.
And the reason I did that is because if you include Christmas classics with the original songs, people automatically go to the classics and they don't give the new ones a chance.
Right.
You can check this with Gary Barlow if you interview him.
He's on next week.
He's mixed them both. And the thing is, he's such a great songwriter. It probably doesn't happen to him. But I thought I'm going to give these songs a chance to live on their own. And then I wanted to kind of complete the circle by doing the classics as well, make this feel like the after party after the show, you know?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it, love
so
it.
So do all
it.
The classics, really just fun and really musical and not kind of too overplayed and just cool.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's one of the finest comic minds of his generation. He's won BAFTAs, staged smash hit shows, written bestsellers, and now returns to stand-up with 2 weeks in the West End, either side of Christmas. So, if you fancy some festive fun from the motor mouth of the master, please welcome the blooming brilliant Ben Elton.
Okay, we'll take it. Happy with that?
What a pleasure. What a pleasure to hear a great intro. And that couldn't have put it more succinctly, except that one of at the beginning, that one of the finest minds. I just feel you could have cut that.
Yeah.
Just that. But
he's
you know,
the finest comic mind.
The finest comic mind.
I can go again if you want.
Yeah, no, let's push
on. This is the thing, because he's ex-sport, right? And sports commentators often say, arguably the best striker in the world. Look, is he or isn't he? Don't
exactly.
Hedge your bets with arguably.
Stop laying your colours to the mast. It's such a pleasure. We started the tour together, Chris, 2 years years ago. Slight interruption. COVID interrupted the world, including me. And here I am finally concluding the 2019 tour with a London season.
This is great. And this is like pop up Ben Elton. Get what you can while you can. Who knows what's around the corner, everyone?
Exactly.
Literally. So benelton.live, Monday the 20th to Thursday the 30th of December. We're talking about Christmas presents. Give someone an experience. Give them an evening with Ben Elton. Discounts for coach parties. Monday. That'd be good, wouldn't it? A coach party to your gig.
Well, it used to be that way with comedy, didn't it? In the seaside seasons and everything. Yeah. Bring a charabang.
Right, benelton.live. What has happened to this set in between then and now, Ben?
Well, I'll tell you, the half hour on Brexit's been junked. That's all I can tell you. Last time I was gigging in Britain, setting off to do the international gigs and then come back, I was still doing half an hour on Brexit. Well, I certainly won't be doing that anymore. I reckon I'll be getting gagged by people's masks. Nobody wants to hear about that. The tour has developed quite a bit. Some of the material goes all the way back to when we were talking about, you remember the archipelago of identity communities that Britain has become? Some of it's still all that going on, and some of it's a little bit COVID influenced. I do a little riff about how time has different rates. You know how Einstein taught us one thing, and let's face it, he did only teach us one thing. It's that time is relative. And I think no more so than in lockdown. You know, I mean, time passes. If you've got a garden, time probably passes at a different speed to if you haven't. If you're 80, time passes at a different speed to whether you're 16 and you're missing out on your first whatever you're missing out on. So, I do some material that's happening around what's happening today, and some of it's timeless. So a mix and a match, mate.
How has it been for you?
I'm a writer, so being, you know, constrained was less significant for me, and also very fortunate. I have a nice house and a nice, you know, nice garden. So, I mean, that, I think, was the dividing line. That was the apartheid. I mean, the different experience. People living in a flat, lockdown, as to people who had a house and garden. I mean, it doesn't make any, you know, it's beyond imagination, the different experience. And I don't think enough is kind of made of that, about the sacrifices people made real sacrifices, because basically poorer people made the biggest sacrifice. So it was fine for me. And also, we didn't have a lot of lockdown because I was in Western Australia, trapped. I left Britain in late February 2020. We just opened up Start Crow the Play with David Mitchell and Gemma Whelan. I got told we were nominated for a an Olivia Award when I got to the airport. By the time I got off the plane, we were closed. The show was closed. I mean, it's not the most dramatic COVID story and by no means the worst suffering, but certainly it was a little bit irritating at the time. And I'd been intending to come back 2 weeks later, you know, get ready for the ceremony and all that. I was in Australia and I got trapped. They locked the borders.
Yeah.
And I was going to be the whole of 2020 in Britain, see my mum. You know, I was sat out there. It was lovely in many ways, but being trapped is quite hard, particularly when you know, your mum's 92, your family are in Britain, etc. So, yeah, I had a mixed COVID, but obviously much, much better than many people suffered,
no,
as we
it.
Must all
I
say.
I get it. Ben, you're awesome, man. Anything you'd like to say to people potentially thinking about coming to see you at the Harold Pinter Theatre?
Well, I don't want to say you're going to save the live theatre by coming to see me, but do go and see a show. We need the cultural catastrophe of the end of live comedy, the end of live entertainment. Almost all my friends are in, you know, show business, yeah. and the misery, the horror of the complete negation. Do you know what? London theatres didn't close for the Blitz. I mean, the last time London theatre closed was when the Puritans closed them, along with Christmas, in the middle of the 17th century. That's the last time there was no theatre in London. But COVID, and I agree, we had to pull together as a community. But it was a cultural catastrophe. The what it did to all those performers, musicians, comedians. So even though I'm not saying we're buying a ticket and come and see me, but you know, think about seeing a show. I know it's a little bit risky. Wear your mask if you want, but if we're allowed, do it. Come into the West End or go to your Panto, wherever you are in the country, and support live entertainment arts, because it's all about the community. One of the last places the community really knows it is a community is sat together in a theatre, laughing, singing along, waving their hands in the air.
Yeah.
Love it.
I would say, if we're allowed, and I'll just add this as well, and we've stayed away from this on purpose for the last few days, while we're still allowed, because you just don't know.
Nah, I don't think they're going to. The Omi doesn't appear to be as vicious.
I know, but there could be something else. So if you get the chance to get out and see something with people you love, and it's something worth seeing or hearing, or watching or whatever, or experiencing, get out there.
Yep, get just out. Maybe take a taxi, have a meal, buy a drink. Support the entertainment arts, because, my goodness, it needs it.
All right, Ben, you're a dream. I hope it's not another 2 years.
We covered a lot of ground, didn't we? I suppose you've had a few people. He's banging on again.
But no, we don't get that.
Such a joy to come back and see you.
Seriously,
mate.
I think our audience's ears and hearts are open to what we're saying.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Have you ever wondered why we hiccup? Why New York is called the Big Apple? And most importantly, should you go rock, paper or scissors?
Oh,
our next guest has all the answers in the latest book from the QI Elves. Funny you should ask again. So please welcome a man so brilliant, he'll even tell you which lottery numbers to choose. It's QI's creator, John Lloyd.
Hiya, John.
Hello, Chris.
You all right?
Yeah, how are you?
Okay, so deep breaths, but a bit of box breathing. Come on.
Sorry to be late.
Don't worry, it's fine, man. Don't worry about it. This is, look, we are fine. We don't really do time. I mean, we're constrained, I suppose, between 6:30 and 10, but anything that happens in between, it's fine, man.
Oh, great. You know, I've known that.
We slow our breaths down, you know, time will make room for us, make space for us. Just the questions there in Vassas' intro. By the way, congratulations. Another great book.
Thank you, Chris.
Where do we go with this? First of all, let's just talk about your outfit today. You look very Great Escape-y, if you don't mind, which sort of you needed to be.
It's a submarine. I've parked the submarine outside.
You look cool. You got the white woolen. What kind of neck is
like
that?
Like a fisherman roll neck.
Yeah. Oh, it's very, yeah. Fisherman's friends. Yeah. You got the leather jacket on. You got the jeans on. Looking dooty.
Well, thanks for calling me middle-aged. That's very flattering.
Well, I actually didn't think about that. He won't be displeased with that.
No.
Yeah, could have called you veteran broadcaster, veteran writer, vintage, barely still alive, John Lloyd, but no. So tell us about the lottery numbers then.
Yes, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 this week.
Why?
Well, I don't know, I just got an intuition about it, really.
Really?
How many lottery numbers are there? Is it 5 or 6? I can't remember. I haven't done it for years.
There's 59 now. There were 49. There's now 59, which is why they
can
put the jackpot put up so much. Yeah. And if you get 6, if you get the full 7 on a big week, then you win the jackpot, which can be whatever it is. Yeah. But if you get 6, which is only one off, you get like, I don't know, 1/1000% of what the jackpot would be, because that's the difference between the 6 and the 7. But you know all this anyway.
Here's how the lottery works, OK? It's like you say there's a guy in London who wants to give you £100 million. All you have to do is phone him, OK? You say, OK, what's his number? So I'm not going to tell you. That are the odds. It's about the same odds.
That's so cool. All right, let's dive into this book. Funny you should ask again. So it's the hows and the whys. I love the why do we never get tinned broccoli question.
Well, yeah, this is very interesting. So this book is actually written by the QI Elves. They're an amazing team we've got here, and each elf has done a few things. And I'm one of the elves. I'm the chief gnome, as you may know. And this is one of mine, the tinned broccoli. So you do get tinned broccoli, but only as soup. Okay, right. You can't. There's in order for tin food to be safe, it has to be boiled in water. Okay, and that's 100 degrees. Okay, but broccoli goes to pieces at 93 degrees, so it just goes into a mush, and also it discolors and it smells horrible. So, and then has to be heated again. So, it's not a good idea to have tin broccoli. It would be disgusting, actually.
It's funny because I was in charge of the broccoli last night and also last week as well. And I was steaming the florette, well, simmering the florette in boiling water. And then what I always do is I take it out and put it in a colander and I blanch it or douche it with cold water to stop the cooking process.
Yes, exactly.
And I thought it was about the length of time. I didn't realise it was about the temperature.
It's the temperature and the length, actually. But right. It's really interesting. So other vegetables that don't tin well are cauliflower, cabbage, courgettes and also turnips. So Baldrick wouldn't have tinned turnips. See, I know you've had the whole Blackadder crew on.
Yeah.
Ben just now?
Yeah, we had Richard on last week.
There's an interesting thing about talking about We Will Rock You. There's a fact in the book which I absolutely love, which is the Queen's guitarist, Brian May, has released a cologne that smells of badgers.
Has he really?
Yeah.
What a badger, smell
you
like?
You want that badger fragrance?
How do you get a badger smell without actually, you know...
Tin badger.
I was going to say.
Tin badger.
Jeez, you don't want to be doing that, do you? What I like about anything you go into, John, is, you know, you didn't stop at the... You know, why is there any tin broccoli? Well, there is, but obviously it's soup, so that's a bit of a trick answer. But then you go on to, what else does this tell us about other fruits and foods within that? So some questions are fantastic springboards for a whole new world of ingenuity and inquiry.
Yes.
Give us some more. Give us some more gold.
Well, it's... So the things... It's a rabbit hole, you know, QI research. So you start, you think, well, this can't be difficult. And it just never ends, really. So I did the one on zebras, which is, you know, zebras are like the most loud, stripy thing you can possibly see, aren't they? I mean, you think, how can that possibly be any sort of camouflage? And so you get completely absorbed in this. First of all, zebras, do you know what colour they really are?
Whether they're black or the white?
Yeah.
No, Maurice Stewart does, by the way.
Oh.
She does.
Does she?
Yeah, she absolutely does. And she told me how you could tell. But anyway, maybe that's for another book.
They're actually... No, it's in here. They're actually black with the black and white stripes. So their skin is black.
Right.
And the fur has white fur stripes. But...
Well, how do you know that?
I don't know. Some scientist guy.
What's the difference between...
I think they shaved one. That's the thing.
All right.
Shaved a zebra and then, you know, it's black underneath.
No way! Yeah. They are black! Moira was right,
it's
by the way.
Amazing...
Moira says they're black.
Moira is always right.
Yeah. The question is, what colour is a zebra's 5 o'clock shadow? That's the thing. And once you've shaved it totally, it's black. Uh-huh. But when it's... What time does it... Yeah, anyway. So... The stripes, okay. So the stripes interact with the grassland, okay, which zebras live in.
Yes.
And they're a completely different colour, but lions are colourblind.
Right.
So they can't tell the difference, okay.
Right.
So that's one. They don't really know what zebra stripes are for. They think it might be that.
Yep.
Or when you get a bunch of zebras running together, uh-huh, the lion is basically completely bamboozled. It just sees like an amazing load of fuzzy lines.
Yep.
He can't, not only can't tell which zebra's which, but he can't even tell which way the herd is going.
Yep.
Okay.
Because car manufacturers employ the same disguise for when they make a prototype,
yeah,
and they have to take it on a test drive. And they don't want other car manufacturers or designers to see what they're doing. They cover it in white and black stripes, but they go at different angles, acute angles. They sort of smash with each other because when stripes are moving and you try and film them, it confuses the camera as it would do the lion's eyes. And that's why they do that.
Wow. That's amazing.
Do you honestly think that's amazing?
I do.
Honestly?
Well, it's like the... Well, I'm like a lion looking at zebras, looking at you. I'm completely befuddled.
All right, funny you should ask again. More of your questions answered by the QI elves, and it's John Lloyd, and it's another QI book, and there's a set of them now, and it's all rather gorgeous. Thank you, John. Happy Christmas.
Thank you, Chris.
Goodbye,
and to
everyone.
You.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
The F1 season is going right down to the wire with not a single point separating Verstappen and Hamilton, which is exactly how we like it. The final Grand Prix of the season is live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1 this weekend. So here to whet our appetite is a man we really love. Oh, yes, we Abu Dhabi do. It's Crofty.
Oh, don't you love the fact you got to introduce Crofty for the Abu Dhabi do Grand Prix? Good morning, Crofty.
That was good. Morning. How are you?
I'm very
Merry
well.
Christmas.
I mean, stolen goods, that intro, but it's okay. We'll take it anyway. It doesn't really matter.
I like it.
Stolen
like
from
it.
Where?
The
from
joke,
the Flintstones joke,
Abby,
yeah.
Abby, do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, of course. What do you mean stolen from where? We all know it's stolen from. Doesn't matter. Do it all the time. Right,
no
okay.
Such thing as an original gag. Don't worry.
To Yorkshire Pud or not Yorkshire Pud on the festive foodie plate in the Crofty household.
Yes, given that my relatives and my mum and dad came from Yorkshire,
uh-oh,
it has a right to be on the plate for starters, main course and dessert, quite frankly.
All right, so that's...
Wouldn't be Christmas without me, Yorkshire Puds.
Okay, so that's free practice, qualifying and the main race, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and we make our own as well, because you can't go and buy the shop-made ones.
Well,
they're just not the same.
They aren't the same, but they're pretty good and they're much more convenient. Mm. But I know if you get a deep baking tray of Yorkshire Pud mix and you dare to do it yourself, you are the superhero with the superpowers of the whole holidays, if you can do that. And you can't, but of course you can't then check on it, because if you check on it, it just collapses, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to use beef dripping as well, because that's best for Yorkshire puddings, makes them taste nice and make some rice nicer, leave it in the oven. Can I just say, it feels really odd to be talking about Christmas when it's 34 degrees outside,
well,
the sun is shining, and it's a bit hot and sweaty.
Not for us, it ain't.
It's just not right.
But also, when you're making... by the way, if you want to have a go at making your own Yorkshire Pud, it's not difficult. You've got to have... Your oven has to be hotter than hell to start with. You can't be...
Yes.
You've got to have a preheated oven, but a properly preheated oven. And the other thing you have to do is the oil at the bottom of your baking tray has to be, like scary. scarily, scarily bubbling, because otherwise you'll get a soggy bottom, and it cannot become unsoggy. If that's got to fry first off the bat, straight out of the gate, hasn't it?
See, yeah, I'm loving this. I need to come round. We need to have a Yorkshire pudding off.
Yeah, we do.
At Shea Evans, we could make up the batter the night before. We could get the oven all hot and roasted, and we'll see who makes the best Yorkies.
Mate, you've got to come round. Let's make that happen. Let's make that happen, because we don't know what is around the corner. So let's do what we can while we can, as long as we do it responsibly. It could. It literally couldn't be more exciting and full of anticipation and trepidation, you know, and potential entertainment and excitement than where we are with the F1 situation going into the final race of 2021. This will be the best calendar, the best season of F1 racing in a lot of people's lifetimes, and maybe, you know, in their whole lifetime.
See, here we are. We're talking Christmas, and I feel like the kid who's got the bike from Father Christmas this morning. Because this is what I wanted. I wanted it to go to the last race. And there was the chance a few races ago that it could be level pegging. And we've got that. And it is going to be level pegging. And there's a bit of needle. There's a bit of aggro. There's a bit of talking before, during and after. And there's a lot of great racing. And we've got the whole Santa sack of Christmas goodies for this weekend. And I don't know which way it's going to go. And that is the best thing about walking into your job at any stage, not knowing how it's going to end by the end of the day, if that makes sense. Yeah. There's a lot of time in sport that we know who's going to win, but we don't know who's going to win out, because anything can happen on the track on Sunday night, and probably will. And although Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen will both be worthy candidates and worthy champions for this year, I honestly, hand on heart, could not tell you who is going to be that champion. Because there's so many twists and turns.
There are so many twists and turns. There's so many tactics being worked on at the moment. So many strategies involving the second driver from each teams and other drivers, and you know, how other cars might perform, and you know where the traffic might be busy for pit stops, etc. I think, to make it really fair, by the way, we're now calling them Lewis Verstappen and Max Hamilton, because we want a bit of both. Yeah, because they're both brilliant in their own way. So we think that's sort of the dream team.
We'd
like them to... How many laps is the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix?
Well, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this year has been lengthened in terms of its lappage, because the track's actually got a little bit shorter because it's been modified. And you want me to tell you how many laps? 58.
58, OK. So what we'd like to happen, Crofty, to make it the most exciting it could possibly be, and for us to truly find out who is the best driver between Max Hamilton and Lewis Verstappen, what we'd like to do is we would like them to swap cars on lap, what would it be, 58, 25, 29. So they need to swap cars on lap 29. So Max gets in the Merc and Lewis gets in the Red Bull. And that's got to happen. Can you make that happen, please?
Yeah, I could try.
Thank you.
But I don't think it's going to work.
Oh, they'd come have to on. Take their seats. What's out. Wrong with you no, guys?
They have to take their seats
so
out.
So resistant
as well,
to change.
No, it's not resistant to change. It would just take ages to swap them over. Right. If they could leap from one car to the other, fine. Okay. I think that's a great idea for the future, though.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, they'd both be equally uncomfortable. So, you know, suck it up, boys.
Suck it up, boys. And just because your feet can't reach the pedals, it doesn't matter. Yes.
Crystal ball time, Crofty. You know, I've got to ask you this. It seems like the Merc's power has been creeping up over the last few races. It seems like hotter temperatures, you know, and the kind of tracks the last three or four races have where they've been, and you know how they've been configured, are favouring Lewis's team. And you know, the Abu Dhabi circuit is not dissimilar. It has to be said.
No, that is true. Two long back straights that will help Mercedes. Although this will be the third race that Lewis will have used that power unit that they brought in Brazil that he won with. Look. Last year in Abu Dhabi, Max Verstappen won from pole and pretty much led all the way. The year before, Lewis Hamilton won in Abu Dhabi from pole and pretty much led all the way. Pole sitter has won four of the last six races, but the track has been modified this year, so it is a little bit different, hopefully to give us a bit more overtaking opportunity. Max has led the championship for 14 of the last 17 rounds. Lewis Hamilton has been world champion since the Mexican Grand Prix 2017, which is 1,506 days ago on race day. So neither is going to loosen their grip on this trophy without the best fight ever. And I think we're going to get the best fight ever. I'm not going to make a prediction because I've got the best seat in the house alongside Martin Brundle calling what I think will be my favourite moment in Formula One. And it's nice to be able to do that. There's no point making predictions. Settle back, enjoy the action, watch it live on Sky, and just admire two of the greatest sports athletes on the planet doing what they do best.
For all Sky F1 fans everywhere, for F1 fans who don't have Sky but have know somebody who does, all we've got to say is Happy Croftsmas. To you this weekend. That's all I've got. That's it. I'm done.
I love that.
All right.
Well, a Merry Christmas to you too.
All right. Goodbye. Ho, ho, ho.
Love you. Love you a long time.
Love you too.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.